Hello and welcome to the Best of Spectrum. I went back to school last January to visit the Swords Educate Together Primary School on Dublin's north side. There are 272 pupils there who come from Ireland and 30 other countries around the world. I asked some of the children to tell me about themselves. We started with Muhammad, who's from Pakistan.
In Pakistan, they use different languages, a language, and the capital of Pakistan is Islamabad. And
when last were you in Pakistan?
When I was 6.
And what was it like? Tell me what it's like.
It was really loud, and there was loads of people on the road selling lots of newspapers and food and everything, and there was lots of shops and Sunday markets, and it's totally different to Ireland. Over there, some people are poor because when the earthquake happened over there, lots of buildings tumbled over, and so lots of people didn't have much money.
Can you remember when you lived there?
I lived there for 2 or 3 years when I was 2 or 3, I think. And then I moved over to Ireland.
And do you miss it? What do you miss?
I miss my granny, my granddad and mom, my aunties and uncles, because all of them come from Pakistan. I have Irish friends in my estate. One's name is James and Ryan and Graham and Sam.
And are they all Irish?
Yeah.
And do you have friends from other countries?
Yeah, I have a little bit of friends from other countries, like Valentina and Arthur and and Ambu and all.
And who's your best friend?
Everybody.
My name is Sienna and I'm from North America. I can't really speak American because when I was 3 years old, I left and I haven't spoken American since I was 2 and 1.
And why are you in Ireland?
Because my dad's Irish.
What do you like about this school?
Everybody's friendly and they don't make fun of what colour you are. Because in my old school, it was quite hard for me because I used to be called Chocolate Face.
Oh, how did that make you feel?
Sad. So then my mom had to move me to this school.
And do they not say these kind of things here?
No.
Why do you think they're better here than from other places?
I think they're better here because there's different type of people here. More kids from other countries.
So are you a lot happier now, I'm sure?
Yes.
What do you do when kids say things like that to you?
Well, usually I'd tell the teacher or I'd tell my mom.
And what did the teacher do?
She'd talk to the child that called me that and tell them that it's not really nice.
And what about, what do you do when they say things apart from just, do you say something back to the kids?
No.
Why not?
Because then they, I don't really know. I just don't say it back. I just walk away.
Well, when I was in play school, loads and loads of people used to call me, big fat hair, and they used to call me smelly skunk, because when I went to play school, because I had brown skin, they started calling me smelly skunk, just because I was from a different country, and then they called me lots and lots of names, and they teased me.
How did you feel?
I felt real sad. I went home screaming, and my mom went to talk to the teacher, but the teacher didn't really care.
And is that different in the school?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Has it happened to you here?
No.
2, 2, 3, 4, 2, 3, 6, 2, 4, 8, 2, 5, 6, 10, 2, 6, 12.
My name is Anya McCormack and I work as an SNA. In Swords Educate Together. Just to explain to you what a special needs assistant is, I work on a one-to-one basis with the individual child, helping this child with their study and with the various different subjects they're taught here. I also assist the child sometimes, not all the time, with personal facilities. And I work with a five-year-old Iranian girl. And the first day she came into school, she walked around the perimeter of the classroom waving these beads in her hand and reading all the charts on the wall, very interested in everything. This child is very interested in everything and reads very well, has the reading ability of a 13-year-old. And through working with her now over the past few months, she now sits in the classroom. I assist her with her artwork. I assist her with her writing. She understands where the teacher is coming from now. She understands that she has to sit down and the environment that she's in. She integrates with the children. Actually, the first week, first 2 or 3 weeks, she wouldn't play with anybody in the yard. She'd stand at the side of the yard and had her beads in her hand. And eventually we got her to integrate with the children. And now she goes out every day. She takes the kids' hands. She plays with them all. And it's just incredible to see how this child has developed since September. It's wonderful to see it. And she's a beautiful, beautiful, very bright girl.
And are there particular difficulties with children because they come from different cultures, more so than you would find in other schools? Do you think there are
more? Well, of course there are. I mean, you've got these children who have so many different languages. First of all, the English language. A lot of these children, English is not their first language. But for instance, we have two boys in my particular class. And the first day when I came in here, neither of these boys knew what sit down meant. And now they know exactly what to do. They know exactly when to sit down, when to stand up. And they've picked up their English very, very quickly. And I can see huge changes in those two boys in particular, these two that wouldn't have a first language as English. And obviously, yes, I mean, there are different cultures in our country now. And you're going to see very, very different changes in the classroom with these children. And it's just a question of the children really adapting.
Do you find that the kids, they come from a different culture, maybe they've been even persecuted in their own country, they don't speak the language, you know, suddenly in a different type of system. Do you find that they are very, very scared at times?
Yes, of course, you would have children who are scared, very frightened, in fact. And through time, then, they realise that the teachers and the special needs assistant and the school is here for their good, and they understand that. But definitely, we have had children who were very nervous coming in here in the first few weeks. And as I said, it's great to see them coming in with a smile on their face in the mornings and happy now. But yes, we had that difficulty in the beginning. And of course, the cultures at home would be different in some homes to our school, so that some children, if I may say this, probably find it a little bit, I'd say it's confusing for them because the teachers are so nice to them and so good to them, and perhaps maybe their culture isn't as ours is when they go home.
Like, how would it be?
I'm a mother myself, and I can pick children out who have been physically punished, and I would say that the children are confused with the fact, and they were nervous in the beginning, you know, with us, because I think they probably thought that what happens at home happens in the school, which of course it doesn't. So different in some cases. But now, I mean, just walk around the classrooms and, you know, see the kids, and there's a wonderful atmosphere here now. The kids are very happy now that they've all settled in. It takes a while for them, but once they settle in and realize that they're safe, they're in a safe environment here, then, you know, they're much happier.
I would think that some of the countries in the schools, in their home schools, you know,
yes,
in their home countries, that they would have physical punishments.
Yes,
there,
absolutely, you know. They would have, of course they would, in their schools. Yeah. Where they've come from, so therefore it's an adjustment period for these children, and it's a culture shock for them to realise that they're not going to be, you know, maybe punished as they had been in their own schools where they came from, of course, yeah.
My name is Karina Lawler, and I'm a special needs assistant in Swords Educate Together School. I think I'm into my third year now. Totally love the job. And as Oni said, it is very varied. You do get children in each classroom who have language difficulties, and we do have to compensate for those children. I have worked with a little boy in my class who came into school in midterm, so he didn't start with all the other children. All the other children had made their own special friends, and this little boy came in from Eastern Europe and did not have any English at all. But I found that he was really eager to learn the language. He wanted to mix in with people. And his way of doing it was he would actually come up and say a word to the adults in his own language. And he'd ask you to say it in English. And then we'd repeat it in both. And eventually he'd get different words. And he made lots of friends. He taught all the children in the class words in his own language. And he just became, you know, a great buddy to all the children. Other things you'd find is children who've come from places that would have had problems, like, you know, wars going on or whatever. You find when they come to play, they actually find it difficult to play gently and softly. It's not that they're being rough, but they're imitating the life they'd seen in their country, as in, you know, they would have fighting games and things like that, and we don't advocate those kind of games in the school, and we'd have to say to the children, let's play softly, gently, that kind of thing. And you try and ask them, like, what, why are they playing like that, or what did that mean to them? Just different things like that.
Actually, I was thinking about that. Have you ever dealt with children who are traumatised from where they come from?
We would never know from the children or their parents whether they've come from troubled countries. They just seem to come in and to be so delighted to be in the school, to be accepted, to be included in everything, and also for the parents to be included in everything. Because a lot of time you find parents from either Eastern Bloc or African countries, they come in and they don't expect to be included. They don't expect to be respected. And I think they find it quite strange when people treat them as equals in the school. And you can see that yourself if you're talking to them or whatever. They're so delighted and they're so thankful, and they thank you like more than they actually need to. And it's lovely to see. And they know their children are much happier here and whatever. But you don't see trauma at all. I mean, as Oni said, you'd see some children come in and they are frightened. We did have a few this year who came in and they were terrified. And they wouldn't even let you touch them or try and, you know, console them or anything. And after a little while, after the first week, the difference in them was just amazing. And their parents would come and say, you know, that the children have changed at home and they weren't as afraid to go out. They'd go out and play at home, whereas they hadn't been going out to play even at home because they were afraid. So I think the kids really enjoy coming here. It is really an exclusive school.
My name's Brettan, I come from South Africa. I have friends, Ronan, Mo, Daniel, Corey, Mark and Thomas. Mo's from, I don't know where he is, I forget now, but Daniel's from Portugal and Mark's from Ireland, Thomas from Ireland, I think. I moved from South Africa because there was killing in South Africa, so I moved to Ireland and it was too hot in South Africa.
What do you like about Ireland?
There's no violence and everybody's nice.
What don't you like about Ireland?
It's cold.
And, I mean, is it hard for you sometimes to have friends from other country or not?
Not really. Sometimes my friend on road, he's called Togi, something like that. He's from China, and I don't know what he says, but sometimes he speaks English.
So is it hard with the language thing sometimes to understand?
Yeah.
And how do you manage then if he speaks Chinese and you speak English? How do you manage?
Well, his mom sometimes tells me what he says, and sometimes he doesn't always speak Chinese.
Does that not bother you when you're playing, no?
No.
Why not?
Because they play the same, but they just speak different.
My name is Sadia. I came from Japan. My father is from Pakistan. And my sister is from Ireland.
Wow, what did you just say to me?
My name is Sadia. I come from Japan. My dad comes from Pakistan. My two sisters come from Ireland. And my mom and me come from Japan.
Wow, that's a very multicultural family.
I came to Ireland when I was 3 years old, but I go to Japan every summer to meet my granny and my granddad, and I go to Pakistan nearly winter or maybe in January or sometimes like that, because I sometimes have to go to my cousin's marriage or sometimes I have to meet my granddad and my granny as well over there, because I have loads of cousins. I have about 32 cousins. In Pakistan, families are really big. Some families have 5 or maybe 6 children.
And do you like living in Ireland, or would you rather live in Japan or Pakistan?
I would like to live in Ireland as well, because it's not that hot. It's not that, even if it's cold, I like it, because in Pakistan and Japan it's really hot and sometimes you can't play outside. It's too hot, and when you go when it's afternoon, if you go outside, you see there's loads of what you call these insects, which you call itchy if you got bitten. So you have to put these special creams so they don't itch you. I have no school in over there, and I always, what you call, stay at my nanny's house, and my mom's dad's brother, I like him as well, because he plays loads of games, and we get to go to their houses, and we get to eat my favourite food over there.
What is your favourite food?
It's called, salmon in rice. Like, it's the salmon are all chopped into pieces and they put it inside with cucumbers and egg, and those are my favourite. They make it specially with mushrooms inside it. They're my favourite food, and they always make it when I go.
And what's it called?
It's called Shake Gohan.
And what's your Nana's name?
Nana's name? I don't really know. They don't really actually tell me. You see, I only, because I just call them Granny and Granddad in Japanese.
Tell me what that is.
It's Baba to Gigi.
I'm Siobhan McGovern, and I teach third class in SOARS Educate Together National School. At the moment, there's about 5 children from, maybe 5 or 6 children from different countries.
Is that difficult? You've been a teacher for a while, yes?
Yeah, I have. I've been a teacher for about 9 years.
And is it difficult to teach children of so many cultures in one class?
I suppose the main challenges would be, first of all, obviously checking the language level of the child, and obviously if they're up to the standard within the class itself, well then you don't have any major problems.
And do you often have a problem there?
At the moment I don't have a problem, but I have had a problem in previous experience of children who may have arrived in with no English straight into the country, straight into a school with no English.
And what do you do then?
In that situation, I found that the class themselves were very, very helpful, the particular class that I had. I assigned a couple of children to mind the, obviously, children from abroad. Okay, so that was the first. So on their first day, they were never lost. And then it just grew from that. And the particular children had, they were from Africa, but they spoke French. So they ended up teaching the children from Swords French, and the children start to communicate using dictionaries, and they're absolutely fantastic. So basically, you know, using project work, speaking when the children were comfortable, because they weren't always comfortable with the spotlight put on them, especially that they hadn't got English, and obviously using anybody in the school, any of the teachers who had French. And obviously I had a little bit of French myself just from leaving CERT, so they had basic kind of, you know, operations within the class. But generally I found it came down to the children within the class themselves, and they were extremely cooperative and very interested, and found it beneficial for everybody, and the children themselves fit in that sense. And obviously I just facilitated it and made sure they were looked after in that sense, yeah.
Language is the one issue then. Are there any other issues, say religious, cultural?
Yeah, I suppose what I would find from my experience in this school is that everything is discussed in a positive way. the children don't have to hide where they're from. They don't have to hide what they believe in. The other day I was doing it, three of the children were doing an art lesson and they were just doing buildings. And one of the boys who was leading it says, well, one of the children could put up a mosque in it. You know, so, I mean, I didn't even have to say that. I didn't even think of it, you know, but he thought of it. So he was obviously thinking of somebody else, being able to move outside of his own zone to be able to go into somebody else's world and be able to see that, you know, somebody else might see that as important. But I thought it was great that he brought it up rather than the child themselves. So that was the level of safety within the class. Obviously, I would learn from the children and increase my own knowledge of different religions. And sometimes I could read from a book and I'm, you know, obviously preparing a lesson. But, you know, it's more useful, I find, if there is a child from a particular religion and they say it as it happens rather than I haven't maybe experienced, I might have experienced working with people from different religions. But to actually get in, you know, to explain it is can be quite difficult sometimes to a group of children. But children themselves are great teachers and they can explain it. And it just seems so natural and, you know, it's part of the school environment. And, you know, I suppose in that sense the difference was celebrated and then people's awareness increased, the children's awareness and my own awareness increases each time I have to go and to learn or to teach about any of the different religions within the school.
Do you guys feel that you are trained enough to deal with all these things as, you know, the normal course of your training as teachers in Ireland?
Well, I suppose I did the postgraduate and we didn't receive any other training in any other cultures as such. But obviously on a personal experience, I have worked abroad and I have worked with lots of different people. So I would feel that my own willingness to learn would be quite high, and having worked with people and having seen differences, I would have had a very positive approach. But in the programme itself, that was like nearly 10 years ago, so there's a lot of change in Ireland in 10 years. So obviously, for it to be made part of a programme would can only benefit everybody, no matter what school you teach in. I have been in situations where I've been very uncomfortable, not in this school, obviously, because of its ethos, but I have found that I've had to ask children to, when there was religious ceremonies on, in schools, that I had to ask them to go perhaps to sit in the library for the duration of the particular service. And on personal experience, I found that very difficult, and they were excluded, you know, to a huge extent. And I found when I looked into those children's eyes, they knew it as well. And, you know, for a lot of children, they were going to their local school. It wasn't a choice perhaps to come to a school like this for lots of different reasons, maybe proximity or whatever, like people have their own reasons for going to different schools. So I found I have worked with children previously over the last 9 years who I felt I wasn't able to accommodate. So I don't think the school system accommodated them. And I felt myself very ill at ease with those situations.
How do you cope with the different parents? Is there any difficulty in, you know, cultural differences, linguistic differences, when you have to engage with the parents?
I think the level of the parents' English obviously is paramount importance. If the parents have some English, well, then the messages, you know, there's very little breakdown in communication. I've had previous experience before, maybe perhaps when there was no English and then there was difficulties, but they were always overcome. You know, you obviously overcompensated, that you made sure you put a journal, you made sure that the parents saw the journal, the times, if the school was finishing early, you were going on a tour, something like that. You just had to make sure that you got all the correct information. But obviously, you know, methods can be used like newsletters that it's used in the school, which makes it much more easy to follow what's going on.
We respect what we have, we're honest and true, and we open our ears to all points of view. We nurture one another while learning and living. What we
guys know what racism is? What is it?
It's when people make fun of you for your skin type or colour.
And it also means if you're like from a different country and they say something about you, like say if somebody is from America and you said, "I hate America," that'd be sort of racist.
And why do you think people are racist?
I think because people who grew up in the times when racism was taught their children, and in the end they taught their children, and so forth.
There's also a gang of people, they're called the Ku Klux Klan, and they have real pointy hats and all this, and they hate black people, so like they always wear white clothes, they never wear anything black.
I think it'd be really good if there was like a white person and a brown person for each class in the student council, because then it would show that we're against racism.
If I would be on the student council, I would say that like if for like racism, it doesn't matter if you're from a different country. It just matters like the school motto is we're all different and we're all equal, and like it's still if people make fun of you if you're from a different country, just don't matter. Just like, say no and get away and just tell the teacher, and then they will stop calling you like a name from a different country. But if you don't tell, they'll keep on doing it. That's what Jared said to us in assembly.
When they used to call me Smelly Skunk, I said, "Look at yourself in the mirror."
When somebody calls you a name, you should just say, you're all different, but we're all equal.
You see, I don't even really look out from the outside. I look from the inside if they're nice or if they're not. I don't really care about their skin or how they look. I look like from the inside, like even though Chloe's little, she's nearly one head smaller than me. And I'm one head bigger than her. We don't actually really care what we look like. We look in the inside. Like we four friends, Caitlin, me, Chloe and Isolde, we always hang around together, and we even spell a word. S-I-C-K. S for Sadia, I for Isolde, C for Chloe, and K for Caitlin.
It's a negative name.
Yeah, I know. We didn't actually know Caitlin, Chloe, just told her. She just, found out that it spelled a name. We still try to look for a name, different one.
How you doing, Angie?
Hi.
Good morning. Oh, yeah.
Jared Kelly is the principal of Swords Educate Together.
On the 1st of September this year, when we opened, we received two junior infant classes. Like every other year, they're multicultural. We would have met all of them twice in advance, once in May when they came to school for a fun day, and once at the end of August. We have a picnic for the junior infants every year where they get together to play. So it breaks down barriers, forges contacts, and they come to school a lot less apprehensive or fearful, or so I thought, until this year when a little boy in one of the classes, really and truly, now his mum had left at this stage, he just, you know, we used the phrase lost it, he just really, really, really acted out of total terror. And for his own safety, for his own personal safety, I had to hold him with another adult helping me. I don't think he welcomed me holding him, but we are the adult. They are the children. We have to make decisions for them sometimes. And in the process of holding him, he most certainly, I was very good at holding him with his hands, but he was very, very agile. And at the end of the experience, let's say I needed some time to myself to heal from a wound he exercised to me with his heel, and my mobile phone came crashing to the ground. So I'm trying to describe a situation whereby he obviously felt terrified of being in school, and he wasn't able to verbalise what was happening and going on for him.
And why was he reacting like that? Was he from a country where, why was he acting up?
He's an Eastern European boy who had no English language whatsoever, and I didn't have any of his language.
And how is he doing now?
He's doing really well. What's really interesting is, if you were watching, you know, from a short distance, you might think, oh, this poor boy is never going to settle. But when the experienced adults in charge and calm, the reality is that on the 1st of September, within 2 hours of that kind of outburst of based on fear, he was engaging with other children at a table in a classroom. Now, very suspicious of me for a little while, and I got, you know, kind of strange looks in the morning. But slowly, I let him dictate the speed and the pace of how our closeness would grow. He's doing absolutely well. He is learning language rapidly. Like all children, they will learn and learn and learn, and we'll think that it's not happening, and one day they open their mouth and it just comes out, because that is the process of learning. We think and we assimilate, and one day we turn it on and we speak.
What's the biggest challenge for you in your job?
I think the single biggest difficulty we have as a multi-denominational school in Ireland in the year 2007 is that the entire teacher training base in this country is not multi-denominational. So the single greatest challenge that I have as a school leader is to involve in the school teachers, special needs assistants, who have a commitment and a passion for inclusion, and to twin with that good training to respond to the challenges of a multicultural, multinational, very diverse student community. Of course we have challenges, but not challenges that people, I very often feel that people project onto multicultural environments problems that they don't have. I've come myself from a total monoculture environment in the west of Ireland, and I mean it has just been such a transformation in my life. I would have travelled to London as a late teenager, quite shocked and scared in a multicultural environment. I would have worked overseas for 5 years in the Middle East, and I just think I've learned a lot in the day-to-day living and in my own training as well. But I think it's more living. It's about contact with people that absolutely, you know, peels the onion so that we get to the kernel of the issue. It is all about being comfortable in who we are ourselves. It's when we are not comfortable in that space that we tend to react to other people. But when we're comfortable ourselves, I genuinely think we can deal with whatever comes at us. I take to school every day a homework. It's in my head, though. I need to learn more about the diversity of cultures in our school. So, you know, if there is a situation, if there is a dispute around which I can't, you know, get my head, I need to always ask myself the question, are both people looking at one situation and both seeing different things? That's as I would say it. If there is a disagreement on the playground, it's a busy place. There are 270 children. One has to take the time. I have to take the time. The supervising teacher has to take the time to allow a child who might not have proficiency in English to communicate their experience of what was actually going on. And they're very good at it. We don't need to use many words to communicate our experience. Given that 78% of communication is non-verbal, children are much more powerful and much more effective at communicating with limited language than adults.
There's recently been reports in the newspapers that principals, and also, of course, parents, are saying that the growing lack of English in classrooms are slowing down schools and negatively affecting Indigenous children. What would you comment on that?
I'd have to comment on that from a point of view of having learned a second language, which I speak quite fluently, being Irish at the minute. The learning of Irish for me and for all of us never slowed down the pace of English as the delivery language for the rest of the curriculum. I think that's really, really important to say. It is really important to say that children who are challenged with English, who do not have English when they arrive in school, are actually steeped in the language for the duration of the school day. I think that's really important. I would not accept that the delivery of the wider curriculum is slowed down in our school on the basis of the number of children who need English as an additional language support. We have a support system in school, an EAL teacher. We have learning support. We have loads of mechanisms for supporting both the child, the class and the teacher. But it does not and has not slowed down the delivery of the curriculum. That would be a mistake in educational planning for that to happen. We have one teacher in the school who's an EAL teacher, an English as an additional language. That's a department sanction for 2 years for those children. She would relate and communicate weekly with all of the parents of all of the children that she is working with. She will meet with them, she will communicate with them in writing exactly what she will be teaching their children for the following week. So there is, that is the best that we can do within the confines of our remit as teachers, to bring on board and the skills as well, and the, and I suppose the support of parents for children who need every support they can get.
What if the ethos at home is not the same as the ethos at school, and you start getting parents who say, I want you to do this, I want you to punish my child in a certain way? How would you respond to that?
The school communicates very clearly and very directly with all parents when they choose to send their children to our school. And the word choose is very important there. And they are aware from the very beginning that we are a multi-denominational school where all belief systems, all faiths, all religions are given equality of response and of treatment and of access. And that is what we are. And that is our defining word, multi-denominational. We are not a Catholic school. We are not a Church of Ireland school. We are not a Jewish school. We are a multi-denominational school where children from all faiths and cultures have equality of opportunity. So that baseline is established. And that is what schools need to do, is to communicate essentially the core message of what they are. And that is your reference point for any difficulties that emerge. And they do emerge. Clearly they do. But I think that when people are reminded that it is a multi-denominational school where every child gets an opportunity to experience through the education process the life experience of other children from any country or any culture base in the world, that is the response to that. Back maybe 3 years ago, two little boys in junior infants, an Irish boy, white boy, and a boy from North Africa, he was Nigerian, Michael was his name, and Michael was a black boy, and they were sitting together, and they were getting on famously, until one day, little Irish boy comes up and says, Gerard, I want to move. And I said, why would you want to move? And he said, I'm afraid I'll get black spots. And I thought, hadn't had this one before. And then I thought, I'm not going to put an adult interpretation on this. I'm going to operate as a child maybe is operating here. So I suggested to him that wouldn't it be possible that the black boy might get white spots? And he looked at me and thought, yeah. So I said, well, we'll just see. If I see him getting white spots, are you getting black spots? Then we'll talk about it again. That actually was the end of it. That little boy was not being racist. He was really verbalising, I would imagine, some out-of-school community language the parameters are the fringes of maybe a conversation he had heard. I just think it's about being creative sometimes and not projecting our adult thinking onto situations where they don't belong. And I think we underestimate children's ability to find their own solutions. And in so doing, we disempower them and we wrongly convince ourselves that we're problem solvers, and we're not.
And yet, Gerard, almost all the children we spoke to this morning could relate some form of racist experience that they've had, all the children who are not white. Now, many of them said they had it in other schools and so on. So children see difference and they comment on it and they bring in from whatever, from outside, like you've just said, you know. I mean, so it's not all that easy, is it?
It's not all that easy. Certainly in this very space where we're now sitting, I would have had, not often I have to say, but it has happened that children would have come in to report that they were name-called or labelled because of the colour of their skin. That is not something that really worries me greatly. What would worry me would be if children didn't report it when it happens, because the reporting is the opportunity to deal with it. And invariably, by the time they come to me, they're already, you know, speaking the solution, or the person who feels that they might be in a little bit of trouble here. And I mean, they will give you the language that neutralizes the racist comment, which would be that in the school, as the poster on the hall says, we're all different, but we're equal. No child is an outsider. So, I mean, at the end of the day, we have to give all children, irrespective of where they come from, irrespective of their age, the skills to solve problems for themselves. And the only way we can teach those skills is by modelling that behaviour, not by throwing theory or other preconceived answers at them. And also I would say it is important when that happens, and we would do it without fail, we would always communicate to the parents of children the facts of what happened, not our interpretation, the pure facts of what happened.
Tell me the story of Jackson.
Little boy called Jackson wasn't long in my class in junior infants, and they attach and they bond very quickly. And one particular day I needed to be away on school business, and another qualified teacher was in for me, but he refused to enter the room because I wasn't in it. And he formed a very strong attachment to a coat hook in the foyer. And as it happened, it wasn't possible to detach Jackson from the coat hook. Jackson moved away with the coat hook in his hand. And that to me is my image, I suppose, in many regards of A, the bond he had with me, but B, the fear. He came from a different culture. He didn't have the fluency of English to communicate his fear. And it was about reading the behaviour to get behind the thoughts that it wasn't misbehaviour, it wasn't bad behaviour. I mean, this is the gentleman who'll now walk down the corridor in the morning, put out his hand and say, "Good morning, Gerard, how are you?" A total gentleman. A total gentleman. I'd like to teach those.